What's up, everyone? It's Michael Scotto, HoopsHype.com's NBA writer and host of the Hoops Hype podcast. With the NBA trade deadline approaching, the Sacramento Kings have had a number of players in trade rumors and the future of their head coach called into question. So on today's episode, I wanted to bring on a former colleague, Sam Amick, who covered the Sacramento Kings during his time at the Sacramento Bee, and he's currently a senior NBA writer for The Athletic, to discuss those topics and more. Sam, how you doing, brother?
Michael, doing great, man. Good to hear your voice. Thanks for having me.
I'll back at you, brother. Always appreciate chatting with you. For those who don't know, you were a pleasure to work with at The Athletic when we were colleagues, and always a great support for some of the younger guys there that were learning the ropes as journalists and whatnot. So with that in mind, you know, I joke with you before coming on the pod that I refer to them as your Sacramento Kings because you've been covering them as a beat guy for a long time, and you still keep great tabs on them at The Athletic now as a national guy. Recently, you and Jason Jones wrote about the team and some stuff about Luke Walton's future and some trade guys that we could see moved at the deadline. So first thing I wanted to start off with was the Luke Walton conversation. In your story on The Athletic, you touched on that Luke is a guy that right now is safe at the moment, barring a dramatic nosedive further in the second half. Now, one thing I was curious of, you know, and a lot of other executives were, you know, kind of poking around, was that after Lloyd Pierce was let go, you know, you were kind of always wondering the next natural question, who would be the next guy that we could see on the chopping block. And, you know, Luke's name certainly came up, being that the Kings are in the bottom of the standings, or close to it in the West, I should say. So you touched on some reasons why he could remain for the rest of this season. So I was curious for you, what do you think that he has to do to keep his job following the second half of this season and looking ahead for future seasons in Sacramento?
I would probably say number one is going to be keeping the locker room. You know, admittedly, the main inspiration for putting that piece together that you mentioned was it started with our phones ringing and people saying, man, I think Luke might be in trouble. Now, and like you said, the timeline was kind of right after Lloyd Pierce got fired. And there is that natural human component within the NBA where they call it groupthink or call it, you know, just kind of like the league-wide context changing, where now the spotlight might shift over to a guy like Luke Walton. Now, the Kings vehemently deny that he was in real trouble around that time. They had a loss to the Knicks where, you know, that was for me when the noise was at the loudest. And, you know, I even had somebody with the team kind of admit to me that, you know, that night they were monitoring De'Aaron Fox's press conference to kind of get a sense of, was he still supporting Luke publicly, or did he say anything that could be perceived as kind of going the other way? And so that's for me why my understanding is that Luke's ability and his staff with Alvin Gentry and Rex Callahan and you know, the other guys, their ability to not lose the locker room has been huge and falls in direct contrast to the Lloyd Pierce situation that you kind of mentioned. And so, you know, I think if De'Aaron turned on Luke and was like, man, we're not getting better, we're not developing, his voice is not landing, I think that would matter a lot to, you know, the Kings owner, Rebecca Rondavive, and their staff. They got, you know, first-year GM, excuse me, Monty McNair, and they've got a lot of voices in the room. And as you know, you've covered the league for a while now, Michael, you know, every organization has multiple voices, but I would argue still that the Kings are a little more complicated than most. They've got, you know, Joe Dumars, his title is chief strategy officer. And, you know, he's kind of Vivek's right-hand man at this point, you know, consultant type role. And, you know, so you've got to always try to figure out, you know, what is Joe advocating for? What is Vivek thinking? What is Monty thinking? Are they going to let Monty execute his plan? But that's a long answer to your question. I think keeping the locker room is huge. And then avoiding like a 10-15 game losing streak. There is, I think, like a PR component here where even though there's not fans in the building and they can go lose games at the Golden 1 Center and not have to face the boos, I think there's probably a tipping point. But the Kings, they've been battered economically by the pandemic. As I, you know, we reported, it's in the neighborhood of $100 million that they're projected to lose. And so they're not in the mood to cut a check to Luke Walton for what would be, for the next 2 years, $11.5 million. And so, you know, a lot of that is going into the fact that he's still got a job.
You know, the other interesting dynamic is they do have Alvin Gentry on the bench. And, you know, similar to when Nate McMillan joined the Atlanta Hawks and Lloyd Pierce, you know, publicly it was made out to be that, well, you know, he's there to help and things like that. But you can't help but wonder, anytime a former head coach joins a bench, I don't know, sometimes you're looking over your shoulder a little bit for sure. And, you know, Alvin's a guy that has been an interim coach before. He's obviously been a head coach as well. And I just figured that that was something that gave me, I don't know if I want to say pause, but it was definitely a little hint there where I was like, okay, now that he's on board, something to keep an eye on for sure. You did mention about De'Aaron Fox as a guy, you know, to monitor and him being pretty much the face of that franchise right now. You know, you also had touched on too that it was kind of a gap year for Sacramento. They had let Bogdan Bogdanovich walk in restricted free agency and retooled the roster a little bit. So I do understand the dynamics of that. And at times I do think some teams maybe let go of a guy quicker. Luke was a guy that when he came to Sacramento, this was a guy that was viewed as a coach on the rise, you know, from, you always heard about Luke as a player having a high IQ during his days with the Lakers. And then when he was on the Warriors, that he could be the next good coach. So it's going to be interesting to see if they can make a run to get into the play-in tournament, which I think has certainly changed the way that teams are operating in terms of the trade deadline. And we'll touch on that. But for sure, I mean, you know, Luke is a guy that we'll see, man. I don't know if he can really turn them around that much better to get further up in the standings for the play-in tournament, but he's got the second half of the season to do it. As you mentioned,
to be fair, Michael, just real quick to interject, I don't know that they care, and that's what their fans don't want to hear. And going into this season, that it's funny for me because I felt like it was their dirty little secret going into the year, was I would do local radio hits where I would kind of not so delicately say, like, you know, listen, I know the fans are tired because they haven't been in the playoffs since 2006. It's the longest playoff drought in the NBA. But this new GM, you know, they fired Vlade Divac last offseason, hire Monty McNair. You know, Monty is looking at this thing from 2020 and beyond. And he's not, and I think he deserves the right to do that. He's not taking into account 14 years of context. And so I don't know that they care. And that's where, as long as I mentioned the locker room, the other number two factor for Luke would be that, you know, and I talked to him on record about this, he's quoted in the story, is that his relationship with Monty is very positive. They talk every day. They have synergy. Their vision is shared. That stuff matters because, as you remember, if you go back to when Luke, you know, was sideways with Magic Johnson in Lakerland, you know, they went months without talking and it was toxic. And when it gets like that, then of course the coach is going to be on the way out. But I don't know that I would even, you know, again, they have to avoid being embarrassed in the second half. But I don't, the truth is it feels like a soft tank, right? Like they have their first round pick for this year and, you know, the tougher second half they have, the better off that pick is going to be. I think they would like to find a way to do that without, again, you know, 3 weeks of sustained losing. Just, but their priorities are definitely, you know, the long view and the bigger picture.
That's a blunt and honest assessment of it, which I appreciate. I mean, for me, and I think a lot of people, you felt like they were kind of knocking on the door last year of the playoffs. So you thought maybe they would finally end that drought if they made certain roster adjustments. But ultimately, does it really move the needle? Not necessarily. So I get that point from Monty's perspective. And you touched on the high draft pick. You know, it's ironic because Monty took Tyrese Halliburton and, you know, previously, and you and I touched on this the last time we spoke on the Hoopside podcast, was how they didn't take Luka Doncic partly because they didn't know if he would fit alongside De'Aaron Fox. And lo and behold, you take another guard, and it seems like it's worked out better than most expected with De'Aaron Fox. So with that in mind, one of their other top draft picks, Marvin Bagley, we've heard his name come up in trade talks. His dad has obviously been out there tweeting and chirping a little bit about wanting more playing time for him, and if not, get him out of there. So from Sacramento's perspective, what is their current view of him right now? Is he a part of the long-term core, and where do they view his development right now?
I feel like it's kind of the in-between stage of, you know, if he continues to develop and if he continues to improve, you know, and if they'd never, you know, came across a trade offer that blew their socks off, then I think they'd be more than happy to almost re-welcome him back into the core. I don't think he's part of it right now. He is a kind of, I feel like they're in wait and see mode with Marvin. He had the injuries the first couple of years. I felt bad for him during that time because, you know, it's not his fault where he got drafted, not his fault that they passed on Luka. And, you know, and I wasn't trying to be insensitive, but even in the story that you mentioned, you know, I had a line about how, like, first 2 years, his jersey might as well have read, you know, not Luka Doncic. That's how he was talked about. And now he's gotten better, but the stuff with his dad has not helped. It sends a strong message that even though Marvin hasn't said it publicly, he's never denounced what his father said. To be honest, it's really awkward and uncomfortable, that whole element, because we forget sometimes that, you know, it was not that long ago. I mean, Marvin's not a kid per se, but he's a very young man, and that is his father. And so, you know, those dynamics are sensitive. But bottom line, it sends the wrong message about, you know, his part in the Kings' future. The flip side of that, as you know, is that, like we wrote, yeah, the Kings have been open to talk about Marvin. My understanding is that, you know, that the offers have been, you know, just kind of, you know, nothing to write home about at all. Because, and I've talked to other executives about this, Marvin's owed $11 million for next year. And I think it's a $14 million qualifying offer as he goes into restricted free agency. That's the problem with being that high of a pick, is that, you know, good for him. He gets a bigger bag than guys that got, you know, taken at 10th, 11th, and all the way down. But it makes teams hesitant to take that on because, you know, typically, as you know, again, rookie contracts are very desirable. Like, let me take a shot with this kid, see if he develops, and then it's going to be quote unquote affordable. Well, that number's pretty big, and it does seem to be big enough that that right now I think it's in the best interest of both parties to have Marvin just keep balling out, try to play better, try to improve on the defensive end. His awareness, you know, on the court leaves a lot to be desired. Be humble when it comes to accepting coaching, and then just see where your career takes you, because right now I think he's lacking control over his situation because of some of those factors.
You know, you did touch on him being a young guy. He's still 21 at this point right now. He's going to be 22 in a couple of days. But, you know, for Marvin, thus far, you touched on the injuries as well. But in terms of, like, stats, you know, you kind of know what you're getting right now. 14, 7, 8 boards. The biggest thing for me is, like, offensively, you knew what the guy could do. It's defensively where, you know, pick and roll, switching coverage and whatnot, that's his greatest weakness, where he's got to improve. And on the defensive side of the ball as a shot blocker, given his height and athleticism, I would think he'd be better at that personally. So, I mean, you know, and you mentioned the financial aspect of it. Right. It's almost like when I would see Lonzo Ball's name in trade talks, similar scenario, guy's going to be a, you know, restricted free agent with a high qualifying offer. Are you willing to part with assets to retain him? To me, it's almost similar with Marvin. You've got to decide.
Yeah, for sure.
You've got to decide, is that a guy that's a long-term fit? And I mean, look, again, I appreciate the blunt honesty about him not necessarily being a lock as a member of the core right now. And, you know, when you look at Sacramento, De'Aaron Fox seems to be the guy. And then the rest, you can kind of change a lot of those pieces. with that said, a lot of guys in Sacramento have come up in trade talks. Recently, I got your colleague Jay King on, and we were talking about Boston Celtics trade targets, and Harrison Barnes' name came up. And we actually recorded before Brian Scalabrine touched on it on SiriusXM Radio. But a couple of guys have come up lately. Harrison Barnes, as I mentioned, Nemanja Bjelica, and occasionally Buddy Hield's name would pop up as well, though his name has come up in talks at times over the years. With that said, similar question to I posed to you on Marvin Bagley. Of those three guys, we know Bjelica is not a part of the core for sure. You know, he's an older veteran at around 32, I believe. But that said, you got Buddy Hield and Barnes, who are still young guys and have been starters for this team. Is Harrison Barnes a guy that they're looking to sell, or more gauging the market at this point, in your estimation? Because from people I've talked to, it seems more of a gauging the market at this point.
I'm probably, you know, slowly shifting over to the opinion being that I'd be surprised if Harrison was back. I think that you're talking, as you and I record this pod, Michael, you know, we got 15 days left before the deadline. This is not the time to show your hand as an executive. And I think as the Kings get closer, it'll probably emerge like the level of urgency, you know, is going to elevate. And Harrison in particular, you know, I wrote a trade column today looking at him and the Celtics situation, which I find really interesting because I think he checks a lot of boxes for Boston. One thing I got into that had kind of, I think, flown under the radar a little bit is that for the Celtics, his timeline on his contract, I think, is a major, major factor because he lines up with Kemba Walker, and it gives the Celtics a way to upgrade the roster now, try, you know, as best they can to stay up there among the Eastern Conference elite if they can get back there, but then not compromise the future because the way their contracts are lined up, you could have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown getting closer to their free agency in 24 and 25 while having an open payroll for the 2023 free agency class. And you're talking Joel Embiid, Jokic, Porzingis, Bradley Beal. I mean, it's pretty loaded. So that to me is why Harrison matters to Boston. The thing that I don't have clarity on is you know, the Celtics' willingness to put enough assets on the table to make it worth the Kings' while. And I've talked to people with the Kings about this. It's like, okay, like, great. If we got to rebuild and move Harrison, fine. But what are we getting back? Like, we all know about Boston's trade exception from the Gordon Hayward deal, $28.5 million. The Kings, I think, would be trying to obviously come back with first rounders, at least one, of course, you know, and then, you know, the Celtics have a bunch of young players that at least age wise would fit what Sacramento is doing. It's just a question of, do they like any of those guys? You know, is there any way Boston would let go of a Peyton Pritchard, something like that, you know, Romeo Langford. So I think there's options. But I also think if I'm Monty McNair, I'm going to start by leveraging the Boston situation everywhere else. I'm going to make sure that everybody around the league knows that I've got something that's halfway decent with Boston potentially, you know, and if you like Harrison, you know, you're going to have to beat that.
I mean, it's interesting you mentioned the leverage aspect. I had touched on this on a story on Hoops Hype about kind of the art of the smokescreen and how executives would leak certain trade talks to have a means to a different end, like you touched on, maybe to get something better than that. You know, with Boston, they have a lot of their first round picks. So, yeah, you can get that back. Their younger assets, the draft picks that they've had over the years, I don't know if they necessarily move the needle. But I also think in terms of Sacramento's case, Harrison Barnes is a guy that has shown I always evaluate guys on what they could be on a championship team. And Harrison Barnes was a nice fourth, fifth option at times during the Golden State years when he was competing in the finals. In Sacramento, he's been asked to do more, and he's done that. But there's the correlation of where Sacramento is in the standings as a result. So you kind of going along the lines you're inching more towards he's not going to be back by the deadline, to me, fits more of that vision that you touched on with Monty McNair having more of a long-term approach. Because if you were trying to make the playoffs now, you would probably hold on to him because those guys that Boston has aren't necessarily going to make you better now. Similarly, Buddy Hield is a guy whose name has come up at times. You know, one of the better shooters in the league, and a guy that can get hot quickly. Buddy Hield's future in Sacramento is what to you? And similarly, is he a guy that you see as part of the long term? Because they got rid of Bogdan Bogdanovic and pretty much gave him even more minutes and opportunity to be that guy.
I mean, I think the short answer is no, and it's not anything. It's not an indictment of Buddy's, you know, the ability to put together a long and productive career. But the Kings appear to be hyper focused on the age factor, and for that reason alone, Buddy does not fit their timeline. Now, the harsh reality of his situation now is that even though he's out there, you know, kind of setting somewhat historical marks when it comes to shooting the three ball, you know, just became the quickest to 1,000, beating Steph Curry's pace, which, you know, sounds amazing, but it's a little bit of a paper tiger, if you will, when you look at the rest of his game. The defense continues to be a problem. You know, he's not much of a playmaker, struggles with ball handling. And I just don't think that by the time the Kings get something sustainable and substantive to go forward with, you know, that started with Fox and Halliburton and grew from there, I don't think Buddy will be a part of it. But for now, I also don't think he's going to go anywhere by this deadline because he's got 3 years left after this one on this contract. And having looked into that recently, I'm not hearing any real loud noise about anybody coming hard for Buddy. And Philly is the team that was always mentioned. We all know, you know, they've been trying hard to surround Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons with shooting, try to do that and have to an extent with Danny Green and Seth Curry. And you hear them tied to Kyle Lowry, but like Buddy requires so much out of a suitor on the contract front that I just don't see it happening. It's 3 years after this one at big money. I mean, that's a fairly long-term NBA marriage, if that makes sense, and a commitment that I think is going to keep him in Sacramento for a while.
One guy I think that we both agree is probably gone by the deadline, almost for sure as you can say the phrase, Bielitsa. Now, he's a guy that I think can help some teams with his ability to spread the floor as a forward. Now, do you have a sense of maybe which team or teams are the front runners for him and what it would take? Because my sense would be if Sacramento can get some type of draft compensation of like a second round pick and, you know, no long-term salary past this year, that would be ideal.
I don't have real clarity on it. I mean, the Clippers were big on Bielitsa last year. You know, was told that's not the case anymore based on their plans. You know, other teams you hear tied to them. The Warriors like them a little bit, you know, but I don't think it's any sort of intense thing. The Celtics, the Pacers, the Bucks are a few other teams that I've heard tied to Bielitsa. But I'm 100% with you on the idea that I think he lands somewhere else. He's going to get, you know, moved. His situation's been pretty uncomfortable with the Kings this year. If you go back to the Bagley thing, you know, Bielitsa started last year, and we reported this in that story, that, you know, he was definitely upset when they started Marvin at the beginning of this year because philosophically he didn't agree. He felt like this, you know, basically like, why am I losing my starting job when I haven't lost it based on performance? And then when he didn't play for about a month and it was listed as kind of DNPCD and I think a back thing and then personal reasons, that for most of that time, he was upset enough that he chose not to play, which kind of flew under the radar. So, you know, his time is unofficially done in SAC, I think, and he's going to play right now because it's basically a showcase type situation, and I think he will be moved. He's an easy one to move, though. You just, you know, whatever you get back is what you get back. He's an expiring contract, and a guy that, you know, in terms of even your own culture, I think it's best for the Kings to, you know, to not have a guy who's that unhappy, you know, be forced to remain.
Yeah. And I get it from his perspective. You know, look, he, you know, in terms of playing time and the merit of that, there's obviously optics of it. And for the Kings, you're going to play Marvin Bagley over him because he's your number two pick and you got to see and develop him. But he could help a playoff team. You know, it'll be interesting to see where he ends up. You know, you touched on a lot about the age of guys and their timeline fit. One guy that Sacramento is going to have to look at long term following this year is Rashawn Holmes. And, you know, recently I caught up with Rashawn on the Hoops Hype podcast and we touched on a number of different topics, one obviously being his upcoming free agency. You know, and talking just to getting an early gauge of his value, you know, this is a guy that's making about $5 million now. Come free agency with the way he's playing, you know, guys averaging 13, 14 points a game, about 8 rebounds, a block and a half, you know, on the top field goal percentage shooters. He could end up as a guy that either doubles or triples that salary on an average annual basis. So that's a significant salary that Sacramento is going to have to decide if they want to retain long term, if they're going to try to make him a part of the core. So with that in mind, what do you see for him in terms of his future long term in Sacramento?
I'm curious to see if he comes up in these talks before the deadline, because I, you know, Michael, when you had texted me kind of some of the topics you were looking to get into before the show, and then you mentioned Rashawn, it hit me that, like, of all the, you know, discussion that has been out there about the Kings, he has not been a big part of any of it. And I think part of it is because organizationally they're so big on him, they're so positive on him, you feel like, oh, he's part of the future. But you got to look at the economics of it, and you got to really ask yourself, like, I mean, it's starting to make me, you know, I feel like there's a chance that, and this is just me talking, not based on anything the team has told me, but I feel like if I'm in their shoes, I got to think about moving him, because as good as he is, and I like him a lot. His competitive spirit is off the charts. He's a great leadership, locker room culture guy, you know, plays both ends of the floor, just defends his butt off, all those things. But that contract that he might be looking at this summer is, you know, potentially a very Kings-esque contract where you end up paying too much for a guy and kind of putting a ceiling on your overall plan as far as how good you can be. It reminds me, I mean, there's a lot of teams in this boat right now. Like, we like this player, but we don't like him at this price. And so because of that, we got to get ahead of this situation and make a tough choice. And I wonder if that might happen here. I listened to I forget which game it was, but late, you know, in the first half before the All-Star break, the Kings commentators, it was Doug Christie and Kyle Draper, and they're talking about Rashawn. And I, you know, I say this completely respectfully. I love their TV team, and Doug in particular is fantastic. But I did sit there and kind of have my ears bleeding a little bit when they talked about Rashawn and why they brought up Joel Embiid. And it was like this idea that when you got a talent like De'Aaron Fox, you know, it's probably even better to have somebody like Rashawn Holmes who compliments him and lets De'Aaron kind of maximize his talent, as opposed to a guy like Joel Embiid where you'd have to throw it down to him on the block. And I'm sitting there going, okay, guys, like, what are we doing here? Because Rashawn's a nice player, but if you hype him up too much and if you pay him too much, you're going to do the same thing that team, you know, small market teams like the Kings have been doing since the beginning of time, which is overvaluing players because they struggle so much to get talent within their organization. And then ultimately, you know, kind of getting mired in mediocrity because of that. And to me, the Holmes thing is really interesting because the fans, like, if you trade Harrison Barnes and you trade Rashawn, and you feel good about what it means for your long term because you avoided a possible mistake, the fans are not going to be feeling that. You know what I mean? Like, they're going to be down, they're going to be mad, they're going to be frustrated. He is a fan favorite. Rashawn is, and, you know, I think that's a real tricky one for the Kings front office.
Yeah, I agree with you on a lot of those assessments. He would have value. It's just that, you know, it's interesting because his age is 27. He's still in the prime of his career. And I think for Rashawn, as long as he shows he can remain healthy and be on the court, he's shown that he can be a starter in the league. And he does things that the modern big man needs to do to stay on the floor. You know, when we talked on the podcast, he mentioned how what ultimately made him sign in Sacramento was how hard they pursued him, because at first, you know, he wasn't sure, being that they hadn't made the playoffs in a while. But, you know, I think he's a guy that certainly wants to feel wanted going into free agency, and he does want to get rewarded. Now, is he going to give a hometown discount to Sacramento? I don't know necessarily how much, you know, that would be, if at all, because the guy is looking to get the biggest bag of his career at this point. And, you know, it was just interesting because previously, you know, Chicago was one of the teams that was interested in him. And you wonder who still has an affection for him now, given that he's only gotten better since he came to Sacramento, but they afforded him that opportunity. You know, he has said that he's enjoyed it there, living in Sacramento, number one. And you touched on him being a fan favorite. He did mention the fan engagement with Kings fans, how that had been going well. Personally, I think if you're looking at Rashawn as a guy that is a starting caliber center in the league, well, then, yeah, you're talking, I'm just throwing a ballpark number out there, maybe around like that $15 million range to more. You know, some guys like Miles Turner, et cetera, you know, they're making $17, $18 million. So, you know, that's to your point. What is that price that Sacramento is willing to go? You know, if it's closer to maybe $13, $15 million, that's not as much of a pill for them to swallow. If it's higher than that and he really takes off further in the second half, it can get interesting. I do think there are going to be a lot of suitors for Rashawn given his age and given the production that he's shown for Sacramento as a scorer, a roller, and a shot blocker. So
I would argue that he, in terms of the guys that could be on the move, you're not going to get much back for Bielitsa. You're not going to get much back for Hassan Whiteside. You're not going to get, I think, a little bit more back potentially for Corey Joseph, who Joseph has, his deal is only guaranteed for $2 million next year. So for all intents and purposes, he's expiring. And I really think a lot of those guys could be on the way out. But with Holmes, I think in terms of potential for return, if Monty is in fact, you know, going to play the long game here and try to go down that road, you know, Rashawn's an impact player that could help a playoff team, you know, this year and be a difference maker. Even, you know, in that kind of a situation, he'd be coming off the bench. But, you know, if you're Monty, I think you probably got to make sure you listen to some of those pitches for sure.
Well, time will tell on that. I mean, you know, it was interesting. He also said that he had a good relationship with Luke Walton, and he felt like the goal was for the team to try to make the playoffs. So we'll see how that ultimately factors into his decision if he remains with the Kings past the deadline. Last thing I'll touch with you on regarding the Kings. You know, earlier in the pod, we touched on the combination of De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Haliburton in the backcourt. It's safe to say that Monty McNair is viewing these guys as the long-term backcourt of the future?
Yeah, no question. You know, they were ecstatic to get Haliburton at number 12. Never thought he would get that far. You know, they paid Fox in the offseason, gave him that massive extension. They are ecstatic that even with the record not being, you know, when they won 7 out of 8 games, they did for a minute get excited about, well, maybe we should shift our plan and maybe even become buyers at the deadline. And that fell apart quickly. They lost 9 games in a row. But, you know, the fact that during that time, De'Aaron showed some real development and fourth quarter play where he was just on fire for a while, leadership wise. He still battles inconsistency a bit, and you know, but that the fact that it's going in the right direction and that he has shown at times to be an all-star caliber player, that, you know, that's kind of the linchpin to their whole plan right now. Like, I mean, sometimes we are guilty of, you know, kind of just seeing a player get better and then we move on and say, okay, Fox is the Kings guy. Well, 6 months ago, you know, it seemed very possible that De'Aaron was not going to continue to get better and maybe they would even have missed on him, you know, as well. And if that would have happened, that would have been disastrous. But they feel pretty confident now that's not the case. And then, you know, again, with Tyrese, I mean, that guy's been fantastic. You know, LaMelo Ball seems to be running away with the Rookie of the Year award, but Tyrese is not only production-wise, but man, if you watch him and his feel for the game and how mature he is on the court for a guy his age, it's impressive stuff. And it really is the kind of thing that I think for the fans and for the front office makes them feel like, you know, they could take it to a special place if they put enough talent around those two guys.
Yeah, and another thing for Tyrese to keep an eye on is he's a pretty big NBA Top Shot guy. We touched on that on a recent story on Hoopsype. So
You did. I like that piece. Good job by you on that.
I appreciate that. I mean, for the Sacramento King fans, listeners, hey, you could just as much have an opportunity to interact with him there if you're a big fan of Tyrese. So definitely keep that in mind. Speaking of interacting, Sam, it's always a pleasure to hop on the line with you and chomp it up, whether it's Kings or NBA talk in general. Keep up the great work at The Athletic, whether it's writing about the Kings, NBA nationally. Great guy to read. I hope you're all doing that as often as possible. Appreciate the time, brother.
Of course, Michael. Thanks for having me, man. Take care of yourself.
Back at you, brother. And I also want to thank everyone else for tuning in. If you want to hear more episodes of the Hoopside Podcast with guest appearances from players like Rashawn Holmes, coaches, executives, and media members such as Sam Amick, you can like and subscribe to it on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and anywhere else you listen to podcasts. You can keep up with my tweets on Twitter, at Mike A. Scotto, and make sure you're following Sam as well. He's Sam_Amick as well. Until next time, I'm your host, Michael Scotto, wishing you and yours all the best.